This is Cole Zerman, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Good afternoon, Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Tyler Donaldson. U.S. Midwest will see regular rounds of rain and snow during the next 2 weeks. World Weather Incorporated saying moisture will be welcome in the western areas while field work will be delayed in the east. Snow, possibly heavy at times in a few locations, will impact the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota today through next Tuesday, with another round of snow expected March 27th through April 3rd. Cold temperatures will be in place through late next week.
Winter isn't over yet in the Midwest. Aberdeen National Weather Service meteorologist Aaron Dorn says to expect more snow here in the southern Red River Valley.
Next round of snow is supposed to pick back up again, another kind of banded feature that gets going in western and central North Dakota and extends down into southeast North Dakota, northeast South Dakota, and western Minnesota later this afternoon and this evening. That one's potentially going to drop snowfall rate on the order of from a half an inch to an inch an hour under the heaviest parts of the banded snow.
Another round of snow is expected to hit over the weekend. That's according to Bismarck National Weather Service meteorologist Connor Smith.
Looks like it could be a stronger system moving through Saturday through Monday or Tuesday, and that is looking like it could bring more significant snow than this system with that. So winter is certainly not over here in North Dakota.
Minnesota legislature is facing its first major deadline. All policy bills must be passed at the committee level before the end of the week to continue in the legislative process. House Agriculture Committee Chair Samantha Vang says a major focus is on the nitrate contamination in southeastern Minnesota.
My intent for this year is really to listen to what ideas we have out there. I think it's going to be a mixed approach. And a balanced approach.
Governor Tim Walz's supplemental budget proposal includes the Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation, or AGRI, grants. AGRI grants are used for agricultural development programs, including biofuel infrastructure and livestock development.
You know, last year we had, you know, a historic, one of the largest budget target that the Ag Committee has ever received. However, you know, unfortunately, when AGRI was created, they had a sunset date, and that was approaching, and that created a hole that we had to fill, and that ate up a lot of our targets. And so this year will be the focus of making sure that, you know, AGRI continues to be whole, so that as if we didn't have to worry about the sunset before.
The Biden administration did not meet its March 1st deadline to release an updated GREET model to calculate tax credits for sustainable aviation fuel. A coalition of farm and biofuel groups sent a letter to the administration voicing its disappointment and urging the quick adoption of a modified GREET model. The letter was signed by the National Corn Growers Association, National Farmers Union, Growth Energy, Renewable Fuels Association, and others. State corn grower and biofuel groups from North Dakota, Minnesota, and South Dakota also signed this letter.
The EPA recently announced a national pollution standard for passenger vehicles, calling for stricter emission regulations. Under the new rule, the EPA expects electronic vehicle sales to account for over 50% of vehicles sold by the year 2032. Corn groups expressing disappointment and concerns over the impacts that the new rule would have on the infrastructure of rural America. Minnesota Corn Growers President Dana Allen Tully says that a more immediate solution is already in place with ethanol.
Oh, it's a huge ask. It's a whole change in our transportation system. So to meet their emission standards finalized in the rule, 56% of new vehicle sales in the U.S. will need to be electric by 2032. Ethanol and biofuels are an immediate answer to helping us achieve some of our tailpipe emissions concerns. It's available now, and any car built after 2001 is able to use unleaded 88.
Alan Tully questions why ethanol is good for aviation fuel, but not for vehicles.
We're very excited about the opportunity that sustainable aviation fuel has, and ethanol being a part of that, and we're working tirelessly on however we can get more ethanol or get permitting reform or plants up to speed so that sustainable aviation fuel is available. But if that is available, and that's the route that we go, why would it not make sense to have ethanol as a component of our liquid fuel for our entire fleet of vehicles across the country? They seem like they should be traveling together. If ethanol is good for sustainable aviation fuel, why isn't ethanol good for the combustion engine?
During a House Ag Committee meeting on the dangers posed by China on American agriculture, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem expressed concerns over the risks to national security by Chinese land ownership in America.
We all saw when China purchased land in North Dakota that they claimed was for a corn processing plant, that there wasn't going to be enough corn in that area to supply that plant, and that it was just miles from a military installation. They were purchasing that land on purpose for national security reasons, and that is why I've made it a priority in my state to ensure that that doesn't happen on my watch. In South Dakota, we worked for 2 years to make sure that we had a bill in place that would make sure we know who's buying our land and that it wasn't going to be from a country that hated us. China would never allow us to go to their country and buy land in their country. They don't even allow their own people to buy their land.
Noem pointed to recent attempts by the Chinese government to purchase land near key U.S. military installations as the prime example for security risks such sales could have.
South Dakota is the home to Ellsworth Air Force Base. It's the home of the B-1 bomber that has protected this country for the last 50 years. It's also home to the MQ-9 Reaper drones, which are in operation protecting us as well. But it will be the first home of the B-21s, which will be the bombing platform that will protect this country for the next 50 years. And it's incredibly important that we stop China and that we make sure other evil foreign governments don't come in and have the opportunity to buy up land next to these military installations. When we talk about food policy, please talk about it from a national security standpoint. It is important that we grow our own food, that we produce it here, and that we're doing it in a way that protects the United States of America.
Get the latest news and weather updates anytime by listening to the Red River Farm Network podcasts. Listen at rrfn.com and most anywhere you get your podcasts. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Agricultural loan demand increased in 2023, and ag lending by U.S. farm banks grew nearly 7%, reaching $110 billion. According to the American Bankers Association's annual Farm Bank Performance Report, over 98% of farm banks were profitable last year, with 53.5% reporting an increase in earnings. Credit quality also remains strong. In the Corn Belt region, which includes Minnesota, ag production loans increased nearly 9% from 2022. Farmland loans increased nearly 6%. In the Plains region, which includes the Dakotas, saw ag loan volume rise 14.5%, and farmland loans increased more than 5%.
West Fargo-based Titan Machinery is reporting full fiscal year, a 2024 net income of $112.5 million, up $102 million from the previous year. Titan Machinery President and CEO Brian Knutson attributes the strong performance to growth across all business segments.
And resulted in record revenue of $2.8 billion and record earnings per share of $4.93. This marked the third consecutive year of achieving record earnings per share while achieving a pre-tax margin of greater than 5%. Our business remains in a position of strength, and we expect to demonstrate the durability of our earnings through this cycle following a multi-year effort to implement greater efficiency across our organization.
Chief Financial Officer Bo Larson says full-year revenue increased 25% to a record $2.8 billion, driven by balanced growth across each revenue category.
Equipment grew 25.3% for the full year and was complemented by solid contributions from our recurring parts and service businesses, which increased 25.6% and 21.2% respectively. Additionally, rental and other was up 10.4%.
U.S. Grains Council's Corn Export Quality Report shows U.S. corn being exported is better than or equal to U.S. number 2 yellow corn on all grade factors. Based on over 400 samples collected from export shipments, the average test weight came in at 58.1 pounds per bushel, 8.9% protein, and below the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's action level for aflatoxins.
USDA's weekly export sales report for the week ending March 14th shows corn export sales down 8% from the previous week and 2% more than the four-week average at 1.2 million metric tons. There were no new crop corn sales. Combined old and new crop soybean sales of 494,000 metric tons are 5% more than the previous week and 45% more than the four-week average. Net old and new crop wheat sales of 176,000 metric tons include old crop cancellations of 110,000 metric tons. The combined total of old and new crop wheat sales is 7% more than the previous week, but 36% less than the four-week average.
Total Farm Marketing market analyst Brandon Doherty says the lack of fresh news has the grain markets continuing to be two-sided.
I think the market's waiting for some news. We really haven't had a whole lot in terms of market-moving news over the past several sessions, so I think the traders are really just anticipating what may happen next week. So we have those reports a week from today, and they're expecting acreage on corn to be down from last year, but up from what the USDA had at the Outlook Forum, which was about 91 million. Now, that is not an official estimate, but I think there's a little bit of maybe kind of uncertainty or confusion as to where the actual number is going to come in, because we have some of the private analysts coming in around 93 million, which again is down from last year, but up from the Outlook Forum.
And we've been seeing two-sided action in the livestock markets.
Kind of a back-and-forth trade there for the most part as well. Both lives and feeders I would call relatively sideways over the past several sessions. Again, I think waiting for some news there. And, of course, the direction that grains decide to take is probably going to impact cattle as well. You know, if grains continue to kind of struggle here, that's probably going to lead to a little more upside just due to cheaper feed prices. But if grains kind of start finding their footing here, that may limit the upside in cattle.
Go to the Red River Farm Network's website, rrfn.com. Sign up for our weekly FarmNet News e-newsletter. You can also download this broadcast. Follow us as well on Facebook and X, all at rrfn.com. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Studies have shown that planting soybeans early can lead to greater yields. Agrigold agronomist Ron Rowling says that planting soybeans up to a week before corn can help maximize those yields.
Typically, you know, our success we've been seeing is because I think we're able to plant soybeans probably 5 to 10 days earlier than corn in most cases. But again, the key is to get the ground fit. But maybe when the growers are thinking the temperature's slightly too cold for corn yet, I would go ahead and plant these. The big things we recommend if you are going to be doing some early planting is make sure you're using a really good solid seed treatment. But again, as long as your seed bed is uniform, you're going to get good seed to soil contact, and you got the soybeans treated, early recommendations have really seemed to pay off.
Proper seed treatment and planting fuller season varieties first can also help.
There's some really good products now to help us with sudden death as well. You know, Saltrol, Olevo, they're both really outstanding products. That's part of that seed treatment package that has to happen, because earlier planted soybeans tend to be more prone to early infections of SDS, so make sure we're using those as well. The other way to really take full advantage of this early planting is make sure you are planting your fuller season varieties first. If we're going to try to extend our growing season, we have to maximize it by using a little bit fuller maturity.
Checking market numbers before we leave you this afternoon. May wheat, Minneapolis, penny and a half higher, 656 and a half. Chicago May wheat's up 3/4. Kansas City is a penny and a half higher at 581 and 3/4. May corn, 2 cents higher, 441. July's up 1 3/4 at 454. December corn, 2 higher, 476 and 3/4. May soybeans, 2 3/4 higher, 12 and a quarter. August is up 3 1/4 at 1222 and 3/4. New crop November, 4 cents higher at 1204 and a quarter. May canola in Winnipeg is down $3.60 a metric ton, $645 even Canadian. April live cattle, 82 cents higher, 188.62. June's up 5 cents. August live cattle down 7 cents. March feeder cattle, 65 cents higher, 250.90. April is down 20 cents. May down 45. April hogs down 62 cents. This is the Red River Farm Network.